to Commissioner's Court. We thank you for being here with us today. As we come to order here, is there someone here who would volunteer to come forward to the microphone and to open our time with our invocation, our prayer for blessing from the Lord? Who will do this for us?
Judge, I think you ought to do it.
Yep. Would you like to? Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. All right. We would all stand together. And then when this is done, I'll lead us in our pledges. Talk right into the microphone.
Okay. Hi, I'm Aubrey. God, as you are here with us today, please bless the commissioners and the public and help us make the right decisions for the right reasons. Thank you.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. A profound prayer. Thank you. The pledges?
To the American flag, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Texas flag? Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. You may be seated. Let the record reflect that Commissioner Nowak is not with us, but we do have a quorum with our other commissioners. Do I have a motion to approve the Commissioner's Court agenda?
Move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, as we go to our citizen comments today, if you would allow me, I'd like to introduce someone to you who is here with us today. Ann Snyder is with us. Ann, who is the chairman of the Woodlands Township, if you would come forward and tell us what's going on, and welcome. So glad you're here. If you'd speak into the mic.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Judge and commissioners, thank you for allowing me to address the court. My name is Ann Snyder, and as Judge Keogh just said, I was recently elected as chairman of the Woodlands Township Board of Directors. I simply want to say, both personally and also as chair of the township, that I greatly value the relationship between the county and the township, and I thank you for all you do and for allowing me to speak this morning. Thank you, Judge.
And thank you so much.
Thank
the feeling you. Is mutual,
thank
for
you.
Sure.
Thank you.
We appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
All right. At this time, we have opportunity for our citizens to make comments. There are a few things that we request of you. If you're going to make comments, state your name for the record. What is the item either on the consent agenda or on the open agenda that you are going to address? We also ask that it is at 3 minutes, and we keep a timer on that. And if you need to give us something, that you would ask permission to approach the bench. With that in mind, is there anyone who would like to come forward and speak to us today on any item on the agenda? All right. Thank you all. At this time, then, let's move on to item number 8, proclamations, resolutions, and presentations. AgriLife Extension.
Thank you, guys. I'm Brandon Gregson, speaking on behalf of the Montgomery County Extension Office for Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. The rest of our staff here behind me will introduce themselves momentarily as they come up and highlight a few of the things that we're doing here for the citizens of Montgomery County. But it's always a pleasure for us to come and address the court and kind of give you a brief highlight of what we're doing and show our gratitude for what you do for us. What we do, the job that we do is one that we care about greatly, we really enjoy, and we appreciate what you do to allow us to do that for the citizens here in Montgomery County. So with that, will you allow us to approach
yes.
the bench?
Oh, wow, thank you.
Thank you.
Look at you guys. You just put that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you all.
A few important people that are with us today. We've got Mr. Rob Hamilton. He's one of our really significant volunteers and serves on our Leadership Advisory Board, which is a sounding board for us with the community. He, along with several others, so Rob Hamilton is sitting out in the audience with us to support here today. We also have Alyssa Sim. She's an assistant ag and natural resource agent here in Montgomery County that serves as well. And Mr. John Tyndall, sitting back here, he's our assistant agent for the Family and Community Health Program. So with that, I'll kick us off with the Ag and Natural Resource Program. It's one that, given our urban atmosphere or ever-growing urban atmosphere, you may not, or most people may not realize the degree of agriculture that's out there, but we do a great deal of work with agriculture and natural resources in Montgomery County. We have a lot of programming toward pesticide applicator education, where we've had well over 500 licensees receive education to continue carrying their license or be trained to get one to handle different pest, weed, or insect pests around the county. And that includes both producers and county maintenance workers, pesticide folks, and whatnot. A couple of the programs that we've been highlighting this past year, aside from pesticide education, with our fragmentation, you know, we've got big lands that are starting to divide into smaller tracts. We have a growing population of people who are coming in, and they're wanting to do their part in agriculture in whatever shape, way, shape, or form. So we do a lot of consult with that. We have a lot of people who are interested in growing their own commodities, locally grown things. So we started highlighting that. We've had some programming over raising and marketing your own beef, and we've got a big program coming up in the spring for that. And that's not just beef cattle, but it's other commodities as well. And then, you know, those are just some of the major programs, but one of the things that we do on a daily basis is do a lot of phone, email, and face-to-face consults in the office, whether it's just what do I do with my property, how do I get an ag evaluation, which we do the education. We don't grant those, right? But we do a lot of discussion with that, a lot of weed and insect pests, wildlife interface, you know, feral hogs, whatever. So our face with the community is really important to us there in that office, and in the Ag and Natural Resource Program, we do quite a bit of that. And so on behalf of that department, thank you for your support.
Awesome.
Y'all do Thank a great you. Job, too.
Yes.
Good morning. Michael Potter. I'm the horticulture agent here from Montgomery County. I manage the Master Gardener Association here. Last year, we were kind of struggling because it was kind of part online, part distance because of COVID and things of that nature. Well, my Master Gardeners really came out this year, and they put in about 42,000 hours of volunteer time.
Oh, wow.
Equaling $1.27 million. So they have just, it's unbelievable what they do. We've done a lot of online programs in the past. This year we moved more to face-to-face programs. We reached over 1,300 folks through our Saturday events and our Thursday night events. We keep adding more educational programs as we become more urbanized, as Brandon said. A lot of people are really concerned about those lawns and their landscapes and the use of water and pesticides in their lawns. So we're trying to address that a little bit more, and I do want to personally thank you very much for your support for our office. Our technology was behind, and y'all stepped up, and y'all are going to help us out as far as getting that so we can do combination or hybrid-type programs for the community. So that'll help us reach even more people. So just thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you again for letting us come and speak with you today. My name is Caroline Cruz, and I'm the Family and Community Health Extension Agent here in Montgomery County. I won't read everything to you that is on the executive summary that you have right now, but just to highlight a few things, some traditional programs that happen in Family and Community Health Program are Families Reading Every Day. That's a family and child literacy program. Walk Across Texas, that's a physical activity program that's an 8-week long. We also have mental health and wellness involvement in task force and other educational programs throughout the year, so you have that information. I also just wanted to touch on a couple other things not in this document. So here in 2022, there were two new family and community health staff members that came on board, including myself, in late July of this year. So I think that's about a little over 4 months, hitting into 5 months here soon. And John Tyndall, our family and community health program assistant, in February of this year. We also have Alicia Martinez, our family and community health coordinator, in the office. So 2022 has really been a year of transition and bringing in new staff for us. And this year brought in a new focus area for family and community health, which is nature for health. So we know the positive impacts of spending time in nature and the outdoors has on our physical health, our emotional health, and our mental health and well-being. So with these issues, as adults and children are spending less time in nature, we actually took the lead on establishing the Nature for Health Task Force in Montgomery County, which is relatively new to other counties. So on this Nature and Health Task Force, we were bringing in Lone Star Family Health Center. We're also bringing in Texas A&M Forest Service, our sister agency, and Recovery Untamed. So I really look forward to offering some new education programs this year for the public that focus on nature for health. And here in Montgomery County, we're very fortunate and blessed to have many natural places and spaces that we can utilize for these programs. So in this year, we'll just continue as well to focus on family education, physical health, including nutrition programs, nature for health, mental health and wellness, working with schools to also address student and staff health and wellness, and also Michael Potter touched on this a little bit too, growing our volunteer base to help us deliver these programs out in the county. And we'll also look forward to responding to other important family and community health needs that come to us from the county. So again, we just want to say thank you for your time today and thank you for your continued support throughout the year. Happy holidays. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Michelle Scaife, and I am the Extension Agent with Better Living for Texans, which is a federally funded program that falls under the Supplemental Nutrition and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So we're part of the SNAP Ed program there, and we are here in this office. So our programming focuses on food safety, food resource management, increasing physical activity in families, and equipping them with the skills they need to grow home vegetable gardens in whatever conditions and whatever space they have for them. So this past year, we were very fortunate to have 5,386 educational contacts throughout this year, which resulted in over 6,000 educational contact hours. 822 of our participants were able to continue or complete a series, an educational series. And there was the surveys that resulted from that showed an overall positive increase in our participants' knowledge of food safety, how to get the most of and manage their food resources, and to implement home vegetable gardening practices in their personal homes. As of today, we have 6 new youth gardens going up in Montgomery County, all throughout the county. Many of them are already installed, and we have teachers and volunteers partnering with us to implement the Learn, Grow, Eco program, which will start off children with an understanding of where their food comes from, how it grows, how we handle that food, and different ways to utilize it there in the kitchen. So again, I thank you so much for your support of our agency and wish you the best of Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Michelle Mahalik. I'm the County Extension Agent for the 4-H program in Montgomery County. When we were here in September, we let our 4-H members give you a little bit of their experiences. So today we would like to kind of highlight some of the successes in the work that our volunteers are doing to make our 4-H program successful. So our 4-H year matches the school year. Our enrollment has increased. From 2021, we had 668 members enrolled, and for the 21-22 4-H year, we had 871. Wow. So we are making a big comeback from our excitement with COVID. As Brandon referred to our county as becoming more subdivided despite our declining livestock projects due to the housing growth and loss of land to raise them. We still have a very strong livestock program in Montgomery County. This past year at the fair, we had 356 4-H members in our 287 livestock projects at the fair, and they took home 4 grand champions and 3 reserve champions, 169 member contacts at major livestock shows, resulted in 52 top 10 placings, 30 of them made the sale with 4 division champions, a breed champion, and 4 overall grand champions at major livestock shows in the state of Texas. We had the most horses. I did not know this until I got a strange phone call in the middle of the year asking about horse validation. We had the most horses validated in the state out of the whole 4-H program across the state of Texas. 8 4-H project leaders had 197 contacts at 13 educational programs that resulted in 180 hours of volunteer service. 17 members showed at the district horse show, with 10 first place, a senior champion judged westerns, senior champion hunter horseman, a grand champion gelding, reserve champion mare, and then 12 of those members went on to the state show and came home with 39 top 10 placings and 3 overall awards at our state 4-H horse show. Because we're becoming more suburban, there's been increased interest and growth in other projects. Vet science, shooting sports, wildlife, public speaking, and livestock judging have all seen growth and all had participants at those contests at the major livestock shows as well as other things here in the county. So our shooting sports program focuses on archery, BB gun, air gun, and shotgun. 22 coaches had 961 contacts at 111 practices in the year for 795 hours of volunteer service. We had placings at San Antonio. We had 2 first place and 4 third place at Houston Archery. We had 2 grand champions in the archery contest at Houston. Our dog project is still the largest in the state. They host one of the 4 4-H dog shows across the state. And then just to wrap up the 4-H year, some of our members compile their learning experiences and accomplishments in a 4-H record book. This year we had 25 submitted, 18 advanced to district. 7 of those were first place winners. 5 of our senior books advanced to state, and we had a state winner, Rachel Haynes, who traveled to Washington this last November on the state winning trip. I consider myself truly blessed to work in Montgomery County and have the incredible support we receive from Commissioner's Court and from our volunteers. Thank you for having us today.
Thank you so much.
Good morning. My name is Justin Sines. I'm the Urban Youth Agent here in Montgomery County. I just want to continue to thank you for your support. Montgomery County is one of 5 counties in the state that have a urban youth discipline. And with that, we are a little different. As we know, if we think about 4-H, we think about cows, plows, and sows, but there is so much more to the 4-H program than those disciplines. As the theme continues to be, is our county is becoming more and more urbanized, and so we need to be able to reach more and more kids and help them to be more aware of where their food is coming from and the importance that agriculture serves in our everyday lives to both provide food and fiber. One of our biggest accomplishments is we reach over 7,000 kids that are not in the 4-H program through our curriculum enrichment and special interest programs. Half of those are through our Hatching in the Classroom program with our program coordinator, Joe Picken. Those kids, for 21 days, learn about embryology and how that chick develops in that egg, and they know where their chicken nuggets are actually coming from. And it's it's a very popular program with our educators here in the county. We are maxed out with our equipment. We do about 3 rounds of hatching every year, and we just got a donation from the Montgomery County Farm Bureau to help keep up with our equipment. Along with that, we do teacher training, so our educators, we're not just about agriculture, we're about providing support to those educators, and we trained 97 educators this past summer, giving them 6 hours of continuing professional education in the areas of K through 5th grade STEM, and also Junior Master Gardening, which has about a reach of 2,000 kids, additional kids as well. So we try to do some new fun things to help grow in our enrollment. One of our biggest areas is we have STEM nights. Every month we do a monthly STEM night for an hour and a half, and those have been filling up within 48 hours. So it's been a on-demand project. And to continue fun and growth, we started a new project for those folks who are in resident areas that are restricted, who can't have a 1,100-pound steer or a market hog on their balcony, but still want to have that opportunity to raise an animal and possibly show it. We are starting a bed of fish forage project. So I took it on the responsibility of actually breeding fish, and we have so far 31 kids signed up yesterday for this bed of fish project. So it's giving these little Clover kids, especially our kinder through second graders, an opportunity to learn responsibility, but also learn how to take care of something and maybe learn something along the way. So I just want to thank you for y'all's continued support, and I hope you enjoy y'all's pecans. Those are our forage pecans. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, good morning, Judge, Commissioners. My name is Matthew Holloway. I'm the Disaster and Recovery Agent for District 9, which encompasses Walker, Waller, San Jacinto, and Montgomery County here. This past April, the 31st, concluded our state-supported mission of the COVID-19 operation, which we totaled a total of just over 1 million COVID vaccines and 4.2 million COVID tests administered. So since that time, I've been working with Montgomery County Habitat for Humanity on preparing a first-time home buyers course, preparing folks for the woes of homeownership. That also coupled with we've been deployed with our veterinary and emergency team with Texas A&M to Raymondville to vaccinate and support folks with animals in underserved areas, as well as we've been working the tornadoes that just impacted the northeast part of Texas, doing ag assessments up there, as well as this past month the tornadoes that came through Cushing, Madisonville, a few months back. But other than that, we've been working with Tedum just to keep preparing Montgomery County and keeping everyone safe. So thank you all for your support. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it. Thank you guys again for your support. Much gratitude for you to you for allowing us to do what we do on a daily basis for the citizens of Montgomery County.
Graham, we thank you for coming and bringing us this report. It is remarkable. Yep. It's remarkable the things that you're doing. You guys are like unsung heroes behind the scenes doing all this stuff, and it's benefiting all of us. I think I speak on behalf of the courts, gentlemen. Would you want to share any words?
Well, I tell you what I saw. Anybody that knows me, I've been in the agriculture business for 30 years. And during COVID, I had we had an increase in people buying chickens, buying vegetables, growing their own vegetables because they were very unsure of what was going on in the world. And it wasn't just a one-time thing. They're still doing it. So I think it's good that you guys are helping support folks like that that don't know a thing about it, but they're trying to find out something. So thank y'all for that.
Thank y'all for all y'all do.
Sure.
Thank y'all for coming. We appreciate it. All right. All right, let's move on to item number 9, County Clerk. We have minutes from November 8th, 15th, and 17th. We'll take them as one. Do I have a motion to approve all these minutes?
Move.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, the consent agenda. As we move forward on that, I'd like to make a couple of changes on item 10I2 on page 8, on I1 and I2. And in that, on the first one, to change the effective date from December 14th to January 15th. Based upon security measures being taken in our storage area that we need to do, fencing and whatnot, to secure some sensitive material. And then also on item number 2, excuse me.
Can we move that to open for discussion then?
Yeah, the item number 1. Okay, we'll move item I1 to open. And then also on the consider and approve item I2, We put please name a funding source. That should say funding to come from existing animal services budget. So we don't have to name that force. Funding to come from existing animal services budget. All right, are there any other changes?
Yes.
All right, things you want to bring in the open. Yes, sir.
I'd like to move 10E6 on page 5 to open.
Let me put this down here if you hold on a second, Commissioner.
10E6 on page 5.
Okay.
And then 10-5 A and B to executive session.
10-5. All right.
And I move with those changes.
All right. We have a motion to move on the consent agenda with modifications. Is there a second? We have a second. All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. All right. First one is the change in date from December 14th to January 15th. Sir?
Yes. So I was just, what is the issue?
Here's what happened.
Yeah, kind of give us
we started out and we agreed on December 14th as the date, mm-hmm. having met with our treasurer. And having gone and looked at the security element, because we want to take and move out of a storage area where there are secured items,
mm-hmm.
I had been up to, and it was just fortuitous, I'd been talking to Melissa Miller over in our district clerk's office, how she had secured highly sensitive items upstairs in the attic, mm-hmm. just by raising the fence and putting some cover. So in order to move that stuff, and so that everybody is comfortable with that, we went ahead and decided, let's just move the date, let's get that done, and we'll make sure that we have it done by January 15th. We already have funding available from previously designated items.
Okay. I just wanted to find out. I know that payroll's been waiting so they can actually have public access into their offices.
It's coming.
So you're changing from December the 14th to January?
Yeah, it's to January 15th.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jason will help oversee that, make sure it happens.
I'm already in touch with the fence company, so
it'll be done pretty quick.
Good.
All right.
Okay.
We have a motion to approve.
Yeah, I'll move on it.
All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Uh-huh.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. Commissioner, 10E6 on page 5. What is that?
That is for, I believe that might be an item of emergency management. I just wanted to state that I have asked the county attorney's office, I had a email sent over to them asking for an opinion, written opinion from them on the, is it appropriate to utilize ARPA funds for engineer, and build an emergency operations center. So this isn't going to affect the advertising, so sure. We can continue with that. I just wanted to state that I've asked them to provide us that in writing, what their opinion is, so we'll have it move forward.
Yeah, perfect.
That's all.
So we're good?
Yeah.
Okay, you have a motion to approve?
Absolutely.
We have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. And then per your request, 10-5 A and B will move to executive session when we get there.
Perfect.
All right, at this time we're going to move to our open agenda.
Wait.
I'm sorry?
10-5 A
and
B. That was on page.
County attorney. Hold on.
On page 10? Is it page 10, Commissioner?
Let me go back and check.
So I believe we're moving M5 A and B for all precincts to executive session, which have to do with approving resolution and orders to defend certain claims that have been brought against Montgomery County.
So what page is that?
It's on page 9.
It is on page 9 of 12.
Yeah, 10M, 5A and B. Yeah.
I apologize. Thank you.
No, that's a problem. Evan was trying to tell me that too. So,
all right. Let's move forward on our open agenda. The first one has to do that I'm bringing up is consider and approve the part-time employing of reserve deputies within county law enforcement agencies to oversee the security tax office during a specific period of time, which is during collections from December 27th through January 31st. If you recall, I was not at the budget hearings because I had COVID, but we had discussed and we're going to discuss adding some additional people. I talked with the commissioner. I also talked with Tammy McRae, and with a desire on the constable's part to keep men in the street, we have reserve officers that we can hire, and it's a different rates that we can treat it just as an extra job, if you will, in these locations. There's five locations, and the expense would be per location at 7 hours or 70 hours at $50 an hour, about $3,500. And with that in mind, with five locations, you're looking at anywhere from $20,000 to $25,000. I talked with Tammy extensively about this, as well as some of our constables. And so it would be an associated payroll cost to not exceed $25,000, and the funding source would come from contingency. I've already checked that out. So I'm going to ask us that we move forward on that.
Can we, instead of limiting this just to reserve deputies, can we to anybody in law enforcement that wants to work overtime?
Yeah, that's why it would be up to.
So the only caveat with that is you can't pay them different than their rate. So if they're an employee and we're paying them overtime, it's at their overtime rate. You can't have a special code and pay them at a different amount. So that's going to vary amounts when they're out there. So if we have an employee, they're working more than their 80 hours, they get overtime, which is fine and doable. But the reserve officers, we can set the rate and pay them. Any officers that work, we need to pay them at their overtime rate.
And well, assuming that they're working over 80 hours.
If they're working over 80 hours and not assigned out there. If they're assigned out there, we pay them at their regular rate.
And the plan is to use reserve officers to keep the other officer on the street, especially this time of year.
Absolutely.
So
this would allow people that are on to work overtime, not just reserve officers, and most of the law enforcement preclude their reserve officers from working extra jobs.
Right.
So you may not have enough reserve officers available.
Exactly. Here's what we have. Let me tell you what I've worked in. If you took the reserve officers at $50 an hour, it comes out to $17,000. We put an up to $25,000 in the event of that very thing, that there are employees that would like to work in addition to that who would be on a regular pay structure. So that's what the up to $25,000 is about.
No, I'm good. I just want to make sure it's open up to somebody that wants the overtime.
Absolutely. All right. Any more discussion? Do we have a motion on that?
I already moved.
We do.
Yes, sir.
The funding source you guys would name as
contingency. Yeah.
I'll second it.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all very much. All right. At the last court, we discussed the issue of refreshments, and I think it was a good thing for us to move and get together and put together an actual policy on this. Jason has worked pretty extensively with our attorneys on this, and it was put up as a support item on our agenda online, but that's a copy of it right there. Jason, if you'd want to give us some highlights of this.
The version I handed you is updated from the one that was put on the backup. Bushra got back to me yesterday after having an opportunity to legalize it and review it since I gave it to her Thursday. The highlights are it covers large meetings, events, official ceremonies, and I think I heard the commissioner say, if we get stuck in budget hearings or something, we can bring lunch in and continue, but through budget hearings that's covered. And then if we have a catastrophe that's not really declared but a large-scale event that happens in your precincts, you would be authorized to purchase meals for the responding first responders on scene for that extended event and things like that. There is a cap to the dollar amount per meal when refreshments aren't necessary. I think it's $10 for breakfast, $15 for lunch, $18 for dinners, and that's an aggregate total for everything, and not to include the sales tax or any customary delivery charges. And it requires departments to have a budget for that unless there's an exception made by this court. So.
All right. Any comments, questions? We have a motion to approve.
They make sure the county attorney was good with it now?
Yeah.
They sent over the draft before you is their draft, so after they've had to make edits.
I move.
And Brakesh will pay it?
Speak into the microphone, if you would, please, Brakesh, for the record. Thank you.
If the court adopts a policy and it's not contrary to the purchasing manual and it, you know, pretty much checks the box with all our P-card policy, then...
Yeah. Good.
And...
Thank you, Brakesh.
Gilbert. Just making sure everybody's buying in.
So our
P-card...
You speak
into the microphone, Gilbert. Raise that up a little bit.
All right. Our P-card policy does not allow you to buy food. So what we would have to do is take this policy and then make adjustments in our procurement manual to accommodate the policy. A suggestion that I have is that we would incorporate this policy into our procurement manual so that way it's we know where the policy is. A lot of times policies get lost. And so we can incorporate this into our P-card or into our purchasing manual. Okay. Since it starts with a P-card and it is a purchase, and then the auditor then would have the authority to review the purchases, and if they fall outside of the policy, then he can refuse to pay those, and the elected official or department head would have to pay the...
Yeah, which it does say that
right.
in the policy. Yeah.
Right. So this ties it all together as a procurement and a payment process in the procurement manual. So
if we do this, let's include that in the motion.
Well, what I can do, I would suggest, can I take this policy, then come back next week with the changes to the P-card policy
and adopt
the whole thing.
Yeah. We can do that. So just
that's a cleaner way of doing it.
With that, would you be okay if I brought the item back for the refreshments at the same time
yeah.
with his
yeah.
edits? Okay.
And then can we, so let's just say that a commissioner has a big sinkhole in their
yes.
precinct and their road crews are going to, you know, they're having to work.
You could authorize, at your discretion, the meal, whether it be meals in the policy are based on the meal times of the day, or you know, or you can order refreshments or whatever if it's not an appropriate
yeah,
meal
that
time.
That was based on the discussions that you had previously.
Yeah.
That we had previously.
Yeah, you actually had a scenario like that that came up in between the last court and this court that I incorporated that scenario into the policy.
Yeah.
So you would not have any ambiguity on whether you were authorized to purchase meals for first responders or even outside agency first responders that are here doing mutual aid.
Yep.
They're included
no,
in that.
Perfectly. If we decide to do that, then Gilbert, make sure that you put the information online so we can get and look at it ahead
yeah,
of time.
His procurement policy is available
right.
for
yeah.
the employees
yeah.
to find.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right,
that's
then
a great
we'll go
idea.
Ahead
yes.
and we're going to table that for right now. We'll bring it back at our
Excellent.
Next discussion on the 20th.
All right.
Thank you
guys.
So much.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
All right, the next one, C, consider discuss take appropriate action on reconsideration previously approved interpreter pay for Montgomery County Courts. If you recall, in our recent court meeting, in one of them, we came up with $65 an hour for our court interpreters, and then we came up with $55 an hour, that's for a trial, and $55 an hour for a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right before Thanksgiving, I got a telephone call from one of the judges who was in a panic. Could not get interpreters, a very serious trial, already been in jail for a couple years and had two items that come up on it. And she said they couldn't get anybody. And I told her, I said, look, you've got $65 an hour to work with. Just anything that's over that, whatever you have to do, do not miss this trial. They would send the bill from the court to our office. So when that took place, this she did. And then we again came up with, in our next judges meeting, this issue came up again about getting interpreters. I had previously told Wendy, who is our Office of Court Administration new manager, Wendy, about this, and I had told her, I said, and I know it was $65 an hour, and I told her $650 a day. Well, then I come to find out that when we were talking about clawing that back, I'd already told that to the judges. Judge Stewart said to me, Judge, I think it's $65 an hour. Meanwhile, Wendy had sent out $650 to all the interpreters all over Houston. Now, with that in mind, I said, well, what does an average trial, what time does it take? Well, they get here at 8, they could be out of here at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. So you're looking at anywhere from 8 to 10 to 12 hours. And so rather than clawing that back, if that's the case, meanwhile, when she sent that out, we couldn't get any interpreters. She immediately got two interpreters to sign up. And how many others, Wendy? 4 or 5 or something like that, that are waiting when we need interpreters now. Yeah. And so I said, before we claw that thing back, I want to take it to the court and see if I can get approved the $650 a day, especially as we've looked at what they're sending for bills that have been sent to our outlying counties of $850 to $1,000 a day.
That was my next question.
And we've also seen receipts showing that they're paying that.
That's what other counties
for the
are doing
interpreters. So my concern, again, I misquoted. I got big shoulders here. I made a mistake in misquoting $65 to $650. When Judge Stewart told me that, I went back and even looked at the video, and I was one of the ones who explained it as half day plus 65 an hour.
But other counties are doing the 850
or
650
yeah.
or whatever?
Judge, other counties are using county employees as interpreters. They're not even paying larger counties. $650 an hour, I mean, a day for an interpreter is insane pay. No reason, no wonder why they're going to flock to us to get on our
if we could.
Our docket.
Well, remember, if a trial is 65, if it's, we're paying $65 an hour, guarantee half day. And you're looking at anywhere from 8 to 10 hours for a trial. Go ahead, Wendy. Share with us what we got.
Certainly. If I can approach.
Speak into the microphone, if you would, please.
Yes, sir. If I can approach, I have some examples of some of the fee vouchers that are going out to other counties. This is three of our local interpreters who reside here in Montgomery County that are working all over the state of Texas. And these are some of their vouchers that they're presenting, where they're getting paid $800 per day for their trial rate or $100 per hour for their trial rate. And that's what those smaller outlying counties are currently paying. And if I could highlight part of the example, 3 weeks ago, in order to get interpreters for a trial, our county had to pay $850 per day per interpreter for that trial. 2 weeks ago, again, before we had $650 in place or $65 an hour, we paid $1,000 per interpreter per day in Judge Hamilton's trial. This week in the 435th, advertising at $650 per day per interpreter, trial rate only, we have two interpreters in the 435th that are working for that rate, and I had multiple applicants who were willing to work for that. It puts us on par with what Harris County is doing, paying $65 an hour.
They pay $65 an hour up to a maximum of 8 hours. I have their what ran through court. I brought it to our court a few weeks ago. And I understand that the judges have to have these interpreters, and the judges have the discretion to increase that pay if they have to hold their trial. But to just blanketly say we're going to pay this amount of money just because, and as I mentioned, there are what's falling on deaf ears is the fact that other counties utilize county employees as interpreters.
Judge
other
Hamilton,
counties use a language line.
Judge Hamilton, would you, if you would, please.
They have to be licensed interpreters.
Microphone.
And that means they have to have passed, first of all, it's a written test, a written exam, and if they pass that, then they take a 3-part oral exam where they have to translate after the person has spoken, and they translate, they have to translate contemporaneously, and the third, I cannot remember what manner that is, but it's 3 different manners. The passage rate in the state of Texas for passing that first part and then passing the other is 18%.
Yeah.
It is a tough, tough test. And so we can't use our employees. I have two in my staff that are fluent in Spanish, but they can't be. And the case that we were talking about, thankfully, those two interpreters only charged us $850 instead of $1,000. So they can't interpret for more than 1 hour at a time without a break, so they had to be two of them there during this period. That was a continuous sexual abuse of a child case and aggravated sexual assault of a child. So one was 25 to 99 years or life, and the other was 5 to 99 or life. And that case was, these events allegedly happened in 2016, and it was now 2019 was the first trial date, and then COVID hit, and we'd been waiting for that time. So it was not a happy moment for me to have to hire people at $850 a day, and I was the one who called Judge Keogh and let him know that this is coming down, because at 10 o'clock the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, we had no interpreters. Yeah. And the two that actually came were kind and knew me and scooted their depositions that they were already scheduled for to other interpreters. But we are in dire, dire need of interpreters. So
I think we need to give our I've sat in the Board of Judges, numerous Board of Judges meetings. This keeps coming up. It came up in the last meeting that we had, which really kind of spurred this, even though it was an error. And one of the judges saying this very thing, he flat looked out, are you going to pay the difference if we need to do this? I said, no, we have a policy. We voted on this in court. And so from that perspective, it's the problem is not going away. And I think we need to give you guys what you need to get the job done.
Exactly. Your 18% number, Judge, clearly shows that these are not people standing in line waiting for a job. They're in high demand. There's not enough of them to go around.
It's a tough test to pass, and I don't know if you know Monica Cejudo was one of the interpreters who gave up something else to come help us, and she said when she waltzed into that test, she thought, I've spoken Spanish all my life, I can do this. She failed the first time. So it's a lot of nuances, a lot of slang, a lot of idioms that they've got to know, and of course they've got to know all the court language, all that goes on during our pleas and all. So.
Judge, out of 10 trials that you have, how many people do you have to have interpreters for?
We use interpreters every day, but just for hearings, just for our pleas, and they're just a few minutes, and they scoot on. And that's when that language line comes in handy. We use it for that, but they won't do a full trial. They won't dedicate themselves to 8 to 10 hours.
Judge, when I sat in magistration this last week, we had one where we used the language line and the other one where we actually had a live person there interpreting.
But otherwise, yeah. As far as trials, Commissioner, we don't. It's just really pretty rare that we have to have the whole trial interpreted. Sometimes your victims only speak Spanish, so you have to look at the whole group of people and try to provide for all of them.
All right. Any more discussion? Your points are noted, Commissioner. All right. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve this. I'll make that a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion carries. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. All right, budget. Amanda.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Can you make this any smaller?
Good morning, Judge Commissioners. This was part of my backup that I put in Friday's packet. This is the list of total carryovers from all of our departments. The total recommended carryover from the budget office is a little over $1 million. Many of these aren't the first time that you've seen it. We talked about some of these at budget workshop. One of the, I think, ongoing things that you can see through many of these departments is there's several courts on here. And so with the courts, this is allowing the courts to continue their professional development in the certified court, certified court management certification. That course alone is $600 per course, and it's a requirement of at least 7 of those courses. So for most of those courts, that's anywhere from, that's normally a 2 to a 3 year course, and so that is some of the budget numbers that you're seeing here as for those certification classes.
The ones for the constables' offices, as you can see, are ones that we have discussed at budget workshop, specifically Constable 3 and Constable 5. There's some other ones for court operations. At the Board of Judges meeting in November, they did ask for me to carry over all of their leftover funds. We did a calculation on court operations and recommended the $389,000, which is a 3.5% contingency on our current budget, plus an overage, what we expect them to be over just on their interpreters alone. So a total of $389,000 for that department. Do you guys have any other questions on any of the ones on my list?
You better add some money to the courts.
We're adding $389,000. They have a $9 million budget right now. We're watching that one, Commissioner Nowak. Every month, Rakesh and I do our monthly financial operations report, kind of giving them an overview of where we think that they are. We do put in some trends in there. We do put in some forecasting in there. And even with all of the changes that have happened in OCA, we do believe that they are still going to be in the green for the rest of 2023. This is more so a contingency spot for them to make sure that if for some reason things go haywire, that we do have some funds set aside.
Also, with our new OCA director, Wendy, she's on it and is paying close attention to this stuff. So I think it'll be a pleasure for you and Rakesh when you bring the report to work with her.
Absolutely.
To stay within our budget constraints.
Do you guys have any other questions on this?
And can you tell me again why Precinct 5 Constable is carrying over so much money?
That's for their two deputies, Commissioner.
Okay.
All right.
I do need a motion on this one.
All right. Do we have a motion to accept and approve these carryovers?
I move.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. Emergency management.
Good morning again, Judge and Commissioners. This item is for a request for $125,000 from ARPA for medical supplies. I've got a current list of gloves, body bags, and COVID tests that I do not have a funding source for currently that I need to purchase.
We don't have enough body bags?
Dr. Panieri's office has asked us for additional body bags. I have
ones in storage.
I have large bariatric bags. They're very large. Apparently, they pose a trip hazard to her or staff if there's not a bariatric patient in that, decedent in that bag. And so she needs appropriate size body bags to continue operation.
And this is, how is it related to COVID?
We've been using the body bags for COVID. She's still seeing a number of COVID patients and COVID suspected patients. So it is an authorized use of the funds. So that's a request that she sent over to my office a couple weeks ago, and I've been holding, waiting to come to court with that request. So.
And you say gloves?
Gloves, yeah.
Are there any gloves over here in this building?
I have certain size gloves, but not necessarily the gloves that are in high use demand. We go through a pallet of gloves about every 2 weeks in the jail currently, and so gloves are quite expensive. I have a pallet that went out, or ready to go out the door this morning that I picked last night after hours and got it ready to ship out. So the gloves that are in demand are sizes I just don't have, or I have latex in stock that we don't use latex in the field for allergic reasons. So.
Okay. Well, all right. Entertain a motion to approve.
Move.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
You have a second? Any more discussion? All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right, tax assessor collector. Tammy, welcome.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are y'all?
Good.
Item 14A, consider and take appropriate action on First Amendment to Tax Abatement Agreement between Montgomery County and MemStar USA and accept recapture of abated taxes and related penalties. This one, they were out of compliance on their employee count, so the amendment lowers the required employees from 80 down to 20. They have 3 years remaining on the agreement. They have already paid the recapture for 4 years that they had received the abatement. So we recaptured $165,000, just a little over $165,000. But I need your approval for this amendment.
So we recaptured where they were in violation of the agreement.
Correct.
So they paid that up.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're wanting to make an amendment to continue with the, just so I understand, an amendment to continue with the abatements, having paid the recapture, now to move forward in numbers that make better sense to them?
Correct. When we recapture the entire period that they were abated because they were not, they were out of compliance last year.
Is this a 10-year abatement?
No, this is a six-year abatement. But they, and they have, I take that back. We recaptured 4 years. This was a 10-year.
So they have how many years left?
They have 3 years. BD, was this a 10-year?
We don't recapture every year.
We recaptured 20...
You recaptured the year they were in violation, right?
We recaptured 2018 through 2021. Let's see. This was a... 1, 2, 3.
8 year
abatement.
When you have a homeowner that can't pay their taxes, do they get the opportunity to come in here and ask for us to change the rules for them? Do they get any sort of restructured agreement or deal to pay their taxes?
For the most part, that answer is no. There are certain circumstances where a homeowner can qualify for a deferment of their taxes.
Over 65.
Over 65 or disabled. And they can, but as far as this company, they paid the base tax plus penalty and interest.
Yes.
Commissioner Walker made sure that the average taxpayer would have to pay penalty and interest as well. So he included that, and they did pay in that $165,000. Some of that is penalty and interest, and it was based on the same amount of penalty and interest that a homeowner would have paid.
But when they asked for this abatement to be granted, they told us they would have how many jobs?
80.
80 jobs, and they can't comply with that.
That is correct.
So they're asking us now to let them continue this abatement, but just not meet the criteria in which they said they would meet initially.
Well, that's with employees, which is true what you're saying, which COVID, allowed.
This company, said they're greatly affected by COVID in the supply chain. The reason they had anticipated 80 employees, they anticipated a second line of manufacturing. They have not been able to get the equipment for that second line. And at this point, they're not sure when they're going to. So that's why they wanted to reduce the employment numbers in order to keep the abatement going forward.
That makes sense.
So other than just to be punitive, they've made a pretty good faith effort to come forward, Commissioner.
That's correct.
And get it right. And everybody's been affected by COVID. I mean, supply chain. I mean, everything.
Still are.
And they actually initially brought this up about a year and a half ago or
That's
more.
Right.
So they've been trying to work through it and to get this amendment for quite some time. And I believe you have already received the funds.
I have, yes.
And the infrastructure they said they were going to put in, they actually put in. And then COVID affected.
They met all the economic requirements, yes.
Yes.
And their plan is still to bring that second line on, but they haven't been able to.
Okay.
I second Commissioner Walker's motion.
All right. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
The motion, is there a second?
We
have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion carries. All right. Let's move on. We're going to temporarily recess to convene public hearings. This one for particular precinct 2. Amy?
Consider the partial replat of Reserve C RPM Commercial to be known as Audubon Creekside South Section 4. The purpose of the proposed partial replat is to subdivide a portion of the unrestricted Reserve C into 32 residential lots and one reserve. Notice of the public hearing was mailed to the HOA. The plat is not ready today and may be submitted by the county engineer for approval at a future date. But is anybody here to speak about that?
Is there an action to be taken on this, Amy?
No, sir. You can reconvene court and we can move on.
All right. If there are no comments, then let's reconvene and move forward to our commissioners. Precinct 3, Commissioner.
Yes, this item is to discuss the weights and measurements for commercial motor vehicle enforcement program that Commissioner Riley and I started about 24 months ago. And when we started this program, we were supposed to be getting some feedback on how the program was doing, and we were supposed to split the revenues from that 50-50 for precincts 2 and 3. And we haven't seen any of those monies come through, so I've asked Rakesh to just give us a highlight of the program for the past 24 months and how it's done.
So we did some extracts out of NitData and Odyssey for all the JPs. For fiscal 21 and 22 combined, life to date, minus the state's cutback, it's $128,550 worth approximate have been collected into the general fees and fines in the general fund. That's the high-level update.
Yeah, and so we, Budget Office and Charlie Riley's team with the BMVs, we, from JP 1, 2, 4, and 5, we show that we've collected $105,000. We didn't have JP 3 numbers available yesterday, so it seems pretty on target with what Rakesh said. We have not filed a BMF yet. We were waiting. We thought originally that the court collection reports were going to have some of this information. So when you guys adopt those each month, that you're kind of reviewing those, we found that they were not on the court collection reports. So we do have some we do have some information for you guys today. I would like to file a BMF next week, ending FY 2022, so that we can, you know, recognize and allocate that money back to the commissioner precincts. Let me just pass this out so you guys have a little bit of information for review. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice.
So the information I passed out to you guys, the one that says CMV weights measures citation records with assessments from JP 1, 2, 4, and 5, that's going to identify to you which agency was in charge of the violation or giving the violation, which commissioner precinct that we do think that it affected, along with the JP's office. Again, Commissioner Narak, we didn't get the dollar amounts from JP 3, so I would kind of go off of what Rakesh sent over. Ultimately, you can see that, you know, these guys are doing quite a bit of work. Just to kind of give you guys and some other information, there was a total in the last six months, 1,785 warnings given and 671 citations given. Out of the 880 stops, 469 were weighed. So these guys are on the, they are, you know, trying to protect our two of our biggest assets, which of course is our people, making sure that nothing happens to our people, and then of course to our roads, which is a big investment to our community. So this is kind of just a brief. Like I said, Rakesh and I can get together with do a BMF next week for you guys' approval to allocate those funds to the various precincts.
Which precincts?
So we do need to get with him on JP3, and then we will allocate it between 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, so the allocation was between 2 and 3 per commissioner's court, and we used Constable 2's deputies almost exclusively outside of Precinct 3 that entire time. So those dollars...
You used who? Constable which? Which
Precinct 3's constable deputies were used almost exclusively outside of Precinct 3 boundaries for this program.
I don't think I agree with that.
I'm pretty sure.
Because they were used all over the county. I mean, Burrell's been
at the number of citations where they were.
These are the collections based on the physical.
But anyway, the agreement in court was it'd be between 2 and 3. And what I'd like to do is have my portion of the funds allocated directly to the Constable 3's office so he can best utilize those dollars for his people.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't have a problem with that, but as we have one in Precinct 4 coming online, I believe, in January. From the
There's two going to class in January.
So same thing for them as well, for Precinct 4.
Would you guys like us to bring something back? I mean, again, this one, we brought it up at the end of the year. Do you guys want us to bring something monthly, quarterly, in the future?
We just got to be careful what we do here. We got an MOU with the state.
Right.
For Precinct 2 and the Constable 5's office that these guys are working under. So we got to be careful how we get too many people doing what they're doing. When we set this up, Lieutenant Silvio was going to be over this commercial vehicle, and then Sergeant Burrell, and then they would work with these guys, and they would check their work, check their reports, make sure everything was done right. I'm not saying anybody's going to do anything wrong, but if we get too many people doing too many things, we're going to mess up our MOU with the state.
Right.
And we don't need to do that.
That was my understanding, that they're the ones in charge and have to approve that.
So we've got two guys right now that are still left with the commercial vehicle, counting Silvio as the lieutenant. We've got three.
But I thought we have two more starting that are coming from Gable's office to go to Cash.
Yes, we're going to start a program in January.
That's what,
in Precinct 1 under Cash's.
Right. Got it.
Commissioner Walker wants to do.
Yes.
But they're not here yet, right now.
I think we already approved it on
consent.
Consent.
Yes, sir.
You approved the position.
Yes. And I'm funding everything, the vehicles, everything. So I've been wanting to do this for 2 years, so it's really Precinct 1.
I mean,
for our agenda here, okay, because now we're talking about adding an additional one, what do we need to do? Amy, help us here, or commissioners, or whatever. What are we trying to get done here on this
item? The way I thought we had this originally set up, and the way I know it's supposed to be set up, is if these guys write a citation in JP5 precinct, that money goes to Precinct 2 commissioner. That's his precinct. If it's written in Precinct 3 JP, it goes to that precinct. If it's 1 to 4, it goes, that's how they do it.
But then what we had said
that's
was
how we were supposed to
JP2, because JP2 is split between two commissioners. We were going to split, and that's why you see on my CMV weight measure citation records, you can see on the commissioner, the ones that were done in JP2, it's 1 or 2, right? So we're more than likely we're going to have to split those funds in the future if that's the way that we decide to go about it. I need some direction on what, because now I'm getting a little bit conflicting, right? Originally, it was the money was going back to, you know, the precinct 2 and 3.
Right. And that's how we
that's
ended
how it was written.
Years.
That's how it was.
Yes.
If it was written in precinct 3, it went to you. If it was written here, it went to me. But again, he's got two guys that are wanting to go.
Total
Walker's,
divided by.
Yeah, Commissioner Nowak is saying that we took the total into one pot and divided it in half.
Because you and I paid
half,
for it
half.
All.
Yes.
We split every. So for the first 2 years, it goes this way. After that, starting January, it goes by precinct.
Okay. Good with that. So we'll take the total and we'll split it in half between Commissioner 2 and Commissioner 3.
And then moving forward,
we'll go by the actual precinct that the JP's office takes it in.
Right.
We
need a motion on this?
Move.
Second.
All in favor?
Hallelujah.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Let's move on. All right. Precinct 4.
Consider and take appropriate action on proposed agreement for financial instruction road improvements by and between Montgomery County, Texas, and Marion Trails Mud Number 1. I move.
All right, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Which one is
discussion?
This? Is this the Marion? Yeah.
That's a
Marion Trails.
Road.
Move.
Vote.
Second. Vote.
We have
a
motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right.
Next is consider and take appropriate action on proposed agreement for finance construction of road improvements by and between Montgomery County, Texas, and East Montgomery County Mud Number 13. This is a development directly in front of the Splendor High School over there on 2090. Most of Splendor schools are along the 2090, a corridor from east of 59, and then the high school and the junior high stuff on the west side. This will put a road through from 2090 all the way over to 242 and take this pressure off of the intersection down here at 59 and 2090. especially in the morning and the afternoon with school traffic. It backs up all the way from Splendor out to the schools out here. We have numerous wrecks at Morgan Drive. They're working on the signal there. That's not going to happen my time there, but we have, this is also a public safety deal. We have tremendous traffic congestion in that area, and with the development of the Marion Trails, it's only going to make it worse without this road coming over from 2090 over to 242 to get some of that traffic over to 59, but via 242 and not coming through 2090 and 59 intersection down there. So I move on that one.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed?
Opposed.
Motion carries. All right. At this time, we're going to move to our executive session. If you all be patient, we'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you all. All right. Thank you all for waiting. We have finished with our executive session. I do want to mention something here, though, about that I neglected when we went out, and that is this, that we did temporary recess for executive session according to Chapter 551, Subchapter D, Articles 551.071, 551.074. We have met, and we are back, and there are some actions to take. Amy?
Judge, I'd like to move on 10M, 5A, and B.
All right, we have a motion on that. To approve, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Good.
All right. Amy, on these others?
On item 17B, does anyone want to make a motion to allow Commissioner Nowak?
I'll make that motion.
To resolve claim number B210003, the real property claim?
Yeah, and to sign any paperwork necessary to facilitate that.
Right.
All right, yeah, I'll move.
This is a real property claim off of the Rayford Road construction project for reverse condemnation.
Yeah, inverse condemnation.
Inverse, not reverse.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Best, did you second?
Yes, I do.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right.
And then on item C, I'd like to make a motion for us to allow, we're going to reassign the DWI and drug courts back to the oversight of Commissioner's Court, and Commissioner's Court is going to ask Judge Keough to provide that oversight to the personnel regarding any staffing changes, any staffing in general, as well as working with, I believe, Judge Hamilton on the courts themselves.
All right. That's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
You have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you. All right. At this time, as we near the end, there are some citizens I know who would like to make some comments about some items. If you would come forward first. Yes, if you would come forward, state your name for the record. And if you would keep in consideration, we have 3 minutes,
yes,
if you would, please.
That's it.
My name is Jennifer Eckhart. I'm in Precinct 2. I don't know if you guys are aware, but yesterday it was reported that a large group of 1,000 illegals came across the border. Border Patrol has now 5,000 in custody, with hundreds being just released on the streets. I had some friends that recently flew through the El Paso airport, and the airport is covered with illegals just sleeping in the airport. I know we also have... I have heard estimations between 40,000 and 50,000 illegals that have been moved over to Precinct 4 East East area, between Precinct 4 and Liberty County. I've heard between 40,000 and 50,000 have been relocated to that area. So it's a serious concern in Montgomery County with the border. I'm speaking in frustration of the fact that we have so many illegals moving into our area, and we're seeing no real action by Abbott. And we're supposed to be a leader in law and order. Well, I mean, at least it says so on our billboards, that we are a leader in law and order in Montgomery County. Yet we still can't get a resolution signed by our commissioner's court, while 40 other counties ahead of us have already signed these resolutions supporting an invasion declaration at the border. Many of us do not have confidence in Abbott, and we believe he needs all the pressure possible to do the right thing. So we're asking you guys to stop delaying and please sign the resolution that you've been provided and be one of the counties taking the stand. Thank you.
For the record, we have taken this into consideration. We continue taking into consideration. We're operating according to our governor's declaration, and we're waiting for a change in that resolution to reflect that, of which I've not seen any. I'm waiting. So just so you know, we'll talk about it. I can talk to you about it afterwards. We're still waiting because the old resolution is obsolete, just so you know.
Yeah, we've offered, I've sent several emails, so have other people, saying that if you needed the help of Jonathan Houlihan to rewrite something, he's rewritten it for other counties and they've already signed it. Again, there's 40 counties who've signed it, so there's no excuse for us not doing it. Thank you.
We do have competent county attorneys that are qualified to write any resolution. I wouldn't be interested in signing something written by outside counsel.
Absolutely.
And we also supported law enforcement part of the border. Was that and our borders here? I think it was about $1.2 million also that we supported them
for sure.
Overtime and issues and things like that to help.
We understand the heartburn that you're experiencing, but of those 40, just for the record, they haven't signed any new, maybe two or three have signed some new resolution I don't know about. They signed the original one that was already trumped by the governor. But that's all we can. That's just a matter of fact. I'm not trying to create a new topic here that's not noticed.
Yeah, I mean, you can discuss whether to put this topic on a subsequent agenda, but at this point, you're getting a little.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the advice. All right. Thank you. Is there anyone else here today? Yes, ma'am. If you would come forward, please state your name for the record.
Judge, commissioners, my name is Lori Clifton. And I come to you with a problem, but I'm hoping that I have a solution for you as well. Actually,
okay.
I have two solutions. I do have one packet. I was hoping that Commissioner Riley was here. May I approach the bench
yes,
and hand
can.
It to you, Judge?
Yes, ma'am.
This is what I'll be talking about. And as of Saturday, I asked for some help from
you. Okay. Is there one for each of us up here?
No.
Okay.
I was actually just going to hand it to Riley.
All right. Proceed.
Thank you. Again, good morning. Judge, on October 25th, I sent you a message, an email requesting a private meeting with you to discuss the ESD 10 and the reappointment of those board members. There are several of the board members that will be reappointed on December of this year at the end of the month. I do understand that that board is a self-governing board. And it's your job and the commissioner's jobs to appoint those positions. So the first thing on the email that I sent you was regarding transparency in minutes. Again, the email was regarding the ESD board and the people of Montgomery County, the people that signed that petition, are requesting that we look at putting 2/3 of our experienced firefighters on that board. Currently, we've got 5 people on the board, and those people are citizens, which we agree with. Most of them own businesses. But unfortunately, they are not doing their job. And what happened is I started going to meetings because they were looking for a bond, and then they just said that they found the money that they needed for a bond. But so then I started looking into their minutes. From April until October, there were no minutes recorded. 0 minutes. I asked the question about those minutes 3 times. I finally put in a public information request for those minutes that then gave them 10 days to get them to me. You will note in your packet there are there's June 9th and June 23rd, I believe, handwritten notes. That is their minutes. If you go online, they do not still have June's notes published.
Okay.
That is all they have. If you look at the notes, you'll see that they're not doing their job. They supposedly have some secretary doing it, but they have a secretary on the board, and they also have an alternate secretary. And if you look at their attendance, there are times that both those secretaries aren't there. But that's okay because they're not even writing the minutes. They're having somebody else write the minutes. What I guess I'm asking, if you look at the petition, that the people of Montgomery County are asking. Let me get to mine. I did provide you, just to let you know, if you look at April, it says that they actually signed their minutes in October, on October 23rd. So April 28th.
I would be glad to talk to you about this right afterwards. Time has expired, but I will talk to you if you want to ring me and just
that
chat for a few minutes.
That is what my email was originally for.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the glitch is. My email is mark.keo@mctx.org.
Yes, and I went off your county website, so that is not where I sent it.
Yeah, I was just noticing that. Thank you.
Yes, so I would love to talk to you afterwards.
Yeah, but we'll talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it so much. All right, are there any other citizens who would like to make comment today concerning any topic of discussion? All right, if there is none, then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move.
I'll second.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion carries. We're done. Thank you all very much.